The crash, the carnival, and the quiet return. The crash, the carnival, and the quiet return. We landed first in Barranquilla, where Catherine's family welcomed us like long-lost relatives. For two unforgettable days, we were swept into the rhythm of the city, long tables overflowing with flavor and laughter, strangers becoming family by the second glass of aguardiente. Every handshake lingered, every smile stretched wide. The sun may have burned hot, but the people, they were warmer still. While we were soaking in that Caribbean hospitality, my brother and his family were still en route from Australia with a stopover in L.A. As we tucked into a sizzling platter of steak and roasted vegetables, I got a message from him, a photo of none other than Piers Morgan dining just one table over in their Los Angeles restaurant. He was clearly gloating. Not to be outdone, I snapped a photo of my Colombian meal and sent it back with a cheeky message, Shakira's lunch, no joke. She has a house here. Couldn't get a photo of her, security was tight, but this was her plate. I could almost hear his laugh from across the continents. Shakira trumps Piers, easily. From Barranquilla, we flew to San Andres, a Caribbean jewel floating just off the Colombian coast, to celebrate my sister Dervish's 60th birthday. For 10 days, reality surrendered. We lived barefoot and sun-drunk, moving between ocean swims and rum cocktails, the tiled corridors of our all-inclusive hotel echoing with laughter late into the night. The resort felt like it had been dropped from heaven, turquoise sea in every direction, and not a clock in sight. We could have stayed there forever. It was there that the boys and I, giddy with sunshine and mischief, decided to hire motor scooters and explore the island like locals. My nephew Alex had never ridden one, so I took on the role of instructor, possibly with too much confidence and definitely too little skill. This, I said, tapping the right handlebar, is the throttle, and this is the brake. One here, one by your foot. Automatic transmission, no gears, foolproof. He nodded solemnly, like he was being handed a sacred rite of passage. Feeling rather pleased with myself, I jumped onto my own scooter to demonstrate. That's when fate and my belly intervened. As I turned the throttle and twisted the handlebars to the right, my not-so-svelte stomach wedged awkwardly between me and the grip. It jammed. The engine snarled. Suddenly, the scooter shot forward like it had a mind of its own. Ahead loomed a rusted iron monstrosity, jagged spikes jutting from its base like something out of a medieval trap. I crashed straight into it. The impact launched me into the air, limbs flailing, a somersaulting mess. I landed, somehow, on my feet, mere inches from impalement. My brother Ermin came running, pale and horrified. He looked me up and down. You're done. No more scooters. And so I was. I traded two wheels for four and climbed aboard a quad bike. Just as exhilarating, though mine had a stubborn lean to the left, and by the end of the ride, my arm throbbed like I'd wrestled an octopus. The drama didn't end there. When we returned the bikes, the rental company was waiting, faces grim. One of the scooter headlights was cracked. They demanded payment. We pushed back, asked about insurance. They threatened to call the police. I reached for my wallet, ready to settle it. But Ermin stood his ground. Go ahead, he said. Call them. And they did. When the officers arrived, it became painfully clear this wasn't a fair fight. They greeted the rental guys like old friends, nodded in all the right places, barely glanced at us. It was theater, and we were cast as the fools. In the end, we paid. Later that evening, sipping drinks by the pool and replaying every absurd second of the day, we laughed, hard. And all I could think was, Diane would have loved this. The madness, the mischief, the chaos wrapped in sunshine. I missed her. From there, we traveled to Cartagena, the jewel of the coast, a city that looked dreamed rather than built. Its cobbled streets and crumbling colonial facades, the vibrant bursts of bougainvillea from wrought iron balconies. It was like Zorro's playground. The wedding was a carnival of joy. A street parade danced past, bursting with color and rhythm. Music, flowers, confetti in the air. It felt less like a ceremony, more like a declaration of life, of culture, of love. We were guests, yes, but also participants in something timeless. And then, just like that, it was over. Columbia faded behind the aircraft window, and gray-skied London rose to meet us. I arrived home to Eastbourne still smelling faintly of the tropics, but the warmth didn't last. The first thing I learned was that Theo, Diane's son, had moved into our spare room. He'd left Stephanie, his fiancée, and their daughter Ellie. Diane told me it was temporary. He just needs space to figure things out, I asked gently. Is there someone else? No, she snapped. He made this decision on his own. There's no one else. I recognized that tone. We'd been together 20 years, 15 of them married. It was the tone that meant, leave it. So I did. I didn't press. And truthfully, I didn't mind Theo being around. He brought life into the house. But something about the timing, the silence, the vagueness, it itched. There were cracks forming, cracks I couldn't yet name, and I had no idea just how deep they would go. After I got back from Colombia, my left arm was throbbing. It wasn't just sore, it looked wrong, puffy, angry, not the kind of thing you ignore. So I headed to Eastbourne A&E, gritting my teeth and preparing for a long wait. After a few x-rays and some poking around, the verdict came in, hairline fracture in the ulna. Small, clean, no cast, no drama, just rest and time. But it explained the pain, the swelling, the way I'd been babying that arm without realizing it. Colombia was behind me now. The sunshine, the scooters, the near impalement. It was time to plant roots. We were in Eastbourne now. New town, new chapter, new chance. The house was large, 5 bedrooms in total, plus a sprawling, self-contained 1-bedroom annex. It had so many nooks and crannies we'd started calling one section the West Wing, half-joking, but secretly proud of the space. Iris had her own little kingdom in there, a room bathed in soft pinks with frilly bedding and her name painted proudly across the wall like it belonged in a storybook. Next to hers was a room for Parker, Caitlin's other little one, with a big toy farm set up, a huge table, plastic animals everywhere, and a wardrobe packed with games. Theo claimed the big back bedroom. Diane took the one next to the bathroom and transformed it into a dressing room, with a single bed and a pull-out underneath just in case. Our room, the supposed master, had a walk-in wardrobe and a decent double bed. But she didn't sleep there. Diane slept downstairs on the couch in the front room, every night. She said my snoring kept her up and that being near the toilet was just easier. I didn't argue. This had been the setup back in Chinbrook Road, too. Deep down, I'd hoped Eastbourne might change that, a fresh place, a clean slate. But no, same pattern, same divide. I knew I snored, loudly. People joked about it. Once, on a trip with my friends Martin and Fred, I was sharing a room with Martin. The next morning I woke up to find Martin sleeping outside on the terrace. Said he'd had enough. My snoring drove him out into the night. But this wasn't about jokes anymore. I wanted to change. For real. Eastbourne felt like a new beginning, and I wanted to show Diane that I was serious, about my health, about us, about making this work. The pain in my knees and hips was unbearable. Walking was a chore. Stairs were punishment. Even getting up off the couch felt like a mission. I signed up with the GP across from David Lloyd. First thing they told me, lose weight. The doctor handed me a prescription for tablets that help flush out fat through your stool. Not glamorous, but a start. Then I remembered Lighter Life. A diet I'd tried years back in Blackheath. It had worked then. Maybe it could work again. I looked it up, found a group in Hove led by a man called Gary. That sealed it for me. My old group was mostly women, and the organizers kept addressing me as Mrs. Ice and Jemil in their emails, despite me showing up week after week, very much not a woman. Gary's group had a few guys. It made a difference. I'm competitive by nature. If someone else was dropping 5 pounds, I wanted to drop 6. I signed up to the Total Fast plan, 4 meal replacements a day, around 600 to 800 calories in total. No real food, no cheat days, just bars, shakes, soups, and willpower. The science behind it? Ketosis. Cut out the carbs and your body switches to burning fat. Takes about 3 days. The cravings drop off. Hunger fades. You feel sharp, weirdly alert, like your body's finally listening to you. So I wrote this post on Facebook. Part confession, part rallying cry. Hi everyone, I'm a lighter lifer. I joined this group last week and have been reading and commenting on some of your posts. I'm 59 years old and a fat bastard. I love my food and coffee, and my work revolves around food all day. As the kids grew up and flew the nest, and after 2 knee surgeries from years of squash, physical activity just stopped. For the last decade, I've driven 600 miles a week visiting our cafes, sampling their cakes, and it showed. In September 2019, I weighed 26 stone. I felt terrible. Couldn't tie my laces. Socks were a challenge. Walking was agony. I was borderline diabetic. Then came the moment. Took Iris, my 4-year-old granddaughter, to Chessington Zoo. Tried to get on a ride. The bar wouldn't close.
Dada,
you're too fat, she shouted, laughing. People stared. I got off. She went on alone with a stranger. My heart broke. We flew to Columbia later that year, for my nephew's wedding and my sister's 60th. I struggled. I had to push my mum in a wheelchair, but could barely walk myself. I was overheating, breathless, miserable. Enough was enough. I joined Lighter Life. By week one, I'd lost over a stone. By October 31st, just 5 weeks in, I was down nearly 3 stone. By week 10, I'd lost 5 stone. I joined a gym. I swam 3 times a week. My cholesterol dropped. My blood sugar stabilized. No more stomach meds. I could breathe again. I took a break for Christmas. Restarted in January. Then Gary, our mentor, left. I refused a new one. It's now April 2020. Lockdown. Cafes closed. Bankruptcy looming. I've put on 6 pounds, but I'm back. I'm still here, and I'm not giving up. We can all do this. We will. God bless Ison, X, Lighter Life, Hat Fat Club, Want to Lose Weight, and it worked. In 3 months, I lost 5 stone. 5 stone. Diane was supportive. One night, half asleep on the couch with the TV flickering, she saw an advert for a folding e-bike. Pedal Assist. A deal on a shopping channel. She ordered it for me on the spot. A gift. A reward. A push to keep going. I loved it. I started riding the Cuckoo Trail, a beautiful 18-mile stretch that used to be an old railway line. Heathfield to Eastbourne. Just me, the bike, and the wind. Sometimes I got friends to join me. Even Fred and Jimmy Botten from Botten's Fun Fairs came along once. But mostly, I went solo, exploring country lanes and chasing that new feeling. That feeling of being able to move again. One day after dropping 3 stone, I walked into Sainsbury's and had an idea. I loaded 2 baskets with 20 bags of sugar, just over the weight I'd lost. It nearly broke my arms carrying them. It hit me hard. I'd been hauling that around on my body every single day. And then came the low blow. Gary announced he was stepping down. No more group. No more Thursday weigh-ins. No more quiet, knowing nods of approval when I smashed another target. I was gutted. Refused to switch mentors. Didn't want anyone else. Gary had been part of the journey. It felt personal. But I didn't want to slide backward either. 23rd March 2020,